Okay, hi brother. My name is Leon Morrow. I'm an alcoholic. Garden variety alcoholic. I met some of the guys on this that I look up and see the squares. Some of the guys I met at Don Major's meeting. Don's my sponsor. We've got way back when my first sponsor died, and I had been listening to Don Major's tapes like so many other people. So I started quoting Don and all that. I'd say something he said, and so I just started going to his house, and it's been like that, gosh, 10, 12 years now. So anyway, probably more than that now that I think about it. Because I came to Alcoholics Anonymous summer of 1986, and I came to that meeting. I was blessed with the gift of desperation. I had gone as far as I could go with alcohol. I could not go any further. I had a guy, I was listening to his talk here not so long ago, and this guy said, there's a line in the book that says, for us to drink is to die. And this guy says, I'm not worried about drinking and dying. I'm worried about drinking and living. Because he wants to say that the quality of life had gotten so bad, he couldn't take it anymore. He said death would have been a way out. And when that guy said that, I understood that. So when I showed up in Alcoholics Anonymous, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, when I went to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was not on a roll. Things had gotten so bad that I couldn't take it anymore. And said, dear God, let me live, let me die, but let's make the pain stop. So that's the way that ended. I was in a hospital for had an alcoholic seizure. They took me, the doctor came to visit me in the hospital and says, this doctor had a psychiatrist on his staff, and that doctor says, we're going to put you in rehab. If he had made a statement like that to me 2 weeks prior to that, it would not have worked. But at that point, I said, thank you. Okay, let's go. And that started this whole deal. But I'll tell you a little bit of how I got to that point. I grew up on a farm down in Alabama. Down there, if some of you guys know where the University of Alabama is in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, I grew up on a farm 30 miles southwest of that. And it was, when I say a farm, cotton fields and all that stuff, my daddy was a sharecropper. And, there was 12 kids in the bunch. And let me tell you, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and I started doing inventories and things like that. I learned about me. I look back and say, oh, that's why I did that. That's why I behaved like that. Over and over, I look back at my life. The experience was going forward, but I look back and that's where I got the knowledge of who I am and what I am and why I am the way I am. That of the 12 kids, we grew up on this little farm, and we were cotton fields and all that stuff. But of that bunch, my dad had decided, my mother told me one time when I was a junior in high school, said, look, you got to make your plans. You can either stay here and pick cotton, go to the Army, or go to college. I said, well, I don't want to go to the Army right now. That was during the Vietnam era, so that was out. So the next one was college or pick cotton. I tossed a coin and went to college. Reason I had trouble making that decision, there were seven boys in the family. Four of those guys tested genius. Four of them. There was two kind of, and another one was pretty good. I was at the bottom of the barrel, and I was, from as far back as I can remember, I was something like a misfit, okay? I didn't fit in my very own. Those guys were smarter than me. It was, how did I end up here? I one time and asked my mother, you sure did you adopt me or something? How did I get in here with this bunch? I didn't fit there. And that's just the way it was, okay? And I grew up and I was lying, cheating, stealing from as far back as I could remember. That's just who I was, and I could not understand it. people would ask you, my mother, all of those kids, most of 10 out of the 12 went to college. So people would ask my mother, her name was Geneva. Geneva, tell us about your children. She said, she was so proud. She'd just go on and on about all of her kids. And this one has a degree in this, and this one's got a master's and this one, PhD. And then she said, and then there's that one. And that was me. And I heard her say that, you know, so I had a bad attitude and it was her fault that I got this bad attitude. But she wasn't lying about me. One time she came in, she used to spank me all the time. She spanked me because I would do bad things. And she would catch me or somebody would tell on me. And she'd just get the belt. That was back in the day of the belts. And she'd just frail on me. And one day, she just walked in and got the belt and started beating on me. I said, wait a minute, I didn't do anything. She said, and I said, who told you I did something? She said, nobody. I said, did you see me do something? She said, no. I said, why am I getting a spanking? She said, you probably did something that I don't know about. And you know what? She was 100% right. I thought I was getting away with it. She just spanked me anyway. But now I tell you what, many years later, I thank God for that lady in my life. She motivated me not to be the guy I was. We grew up on that farm picking cotton, get on through that business there. We were bootleggers. We ran a moonshine whiskey still. And by the time I was 12 years old, my next oldest brother, my dad, was running the still, and they said, come on over, you can help out. So I was working at a still at 12 years old, just helping them out, do little running everything, thing. Go get some wood. We burned the regular firewood. Go get some wood, do this, do that. Go down to the creek, get a bucket of water. And we made that whiskey with water out of a creek, but you boil it so it cleans itself up. But anyway, that's what I was doing at 12 years old. But I didn't drink whiskey. But now let me tell you about me. I had all of those things that I learned about myself, the fears, the resentments, the anger. At one point that was lying in the book, there's continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. So I learned when I got to all of that stuff and I started looking back at myself, I suffered from alcoholism. I thought alcoholism was caused by drinking whiskey. I suffered from alcoholism as a child, okay? I suffered from more, better, and different. I don't care how much you gave me, I wanted more. I don't care how good it was. I wanted better or different. That's just a disease I had. So I was caught up in this opposite sex thing for 13 or 14 years old. I had never drank any whiskey. Now, I knew how to make it, but I didn't drink that stuff. That stuff was made for selling. That was the big joke we told. That stuff is not made for drinking. It's made for selling. So I was doing all that, and I'll tell you what now. I went to a dance one night. Now, I've got this obsession with members of the opposite sex already, and I think it's almost like something like alcoholism. It's an obsession. And tonight's going to be my coming out night. I'm about 15 years old. I just got my little driver's permit, and I'm at this basketball game with a car on my own. And I've had my eyes on this one little girl for a while. So I'm at the gym after the dances always happen after the basketball game back in the country like that. I got my eye on this woman. So I go over. I finally decide I'm going to ask her to dance. I am scared to death. I didn't know. When I'm walking across the room with my hands in my pocket and my head down, that's a sign of fear. I didn't feel good enough. There was something wrong with me. But I finally go over and ask this little girl to dance. She says, no, I could have died. So then I look back over at the guys that I was sitting with, I was hanging out with over there. They were laughing at me. They thought it was funny, funny, funny. And then that made me feel worse. That's the disease that I've got, okay? I get back over there, and one of the guys says, come go with me. I got something. I got exactly what you need. So we go out to his car. He opens the trunk, and everybody knows. He pulls a bag out. Everybody knows what it is, just don't know what brand it is. You know, it's all wrapped up in that brown paper bag, twisted at the top. We all know it's a bottle of booze. We just don't know what brand it is, okay? He pulled it out, and this is where it gets kind of funny to me. I'm the guy who was helping out at that. By the time this happened, I'm actually running the still because daddy's had some health issues, and my oldest brother graduated. He pulls out a bottle of wine, and holds it up and says, "What's the word?" Other guy goes, "Thunderbird. What's the prize? 50 to." And I thought, "You got to be kidding me. This is like lemonade." I wanted to say, "Guys, no, this is not for me. I know how to make real whiskey. I don't want this lemonade that you got here or ginger ale that you got." But you can't tell people that. So the guy gave me some of that stuff. He passed it around, and everyone, you know, "What's the word?" Passed it around. This guy drank, then he passed it to me. We all drank out of that same bottle. There was no virus going on then. Everybody just drank out, didn't have a glass or anything, just drank out of the bottle. And that's what we did. And we hang around out there, drink a little bit more and talk and drink. And pretty soon the bottle is all gone. We must have stayed out there 30 minutes. And then I get ready to go back in. Now, the first time I went over to ask that little girl to dance, I had my head down, hands in pocket. And now that wine has kicked in. The wine has changed my whole persona. My personality has changed. The fear is gone. I went across that room before with my head down, hand in pocket. Now I got gliding my stride. That alcoholic has changed me to somebody. I am not afraid of girls. I'm not afraid to talk to people. I go over there and ask her to dance. She says no. And I'm thinking, wait a minute. But you know what? What do I do now? The wine told me, ask somebody else. That fear was gone. There was 8 or 10 of them sat there. I would have asked all 8 or 9 or 10 or whatever it was. I don't remember exactly the number. There was a group of them sitting there, and one finally said yes. I had grown up with the theory that black people could all dance. We got rhythm and all like that. Well, let me share this with you. I had 2 left feet. I ain't got no rhythm. I can't dance. But you know what? That I didn't realize my 2 left feet were the product of fear. Give me a little booze. And then I loosened up, and baby, I'm not a great dancer, but I can do a little bit of something. And that was not the dance, as they say in the song, "I Danced the Night Away." That night is the reason I'm sitting here this evening. That whole night, because from that day to the last day that I drank, I was trying to recapture the moments of that night, because I felt like the fear was gone. The less than gone. I was a misfit no more. All of alcohol changed all of that for me. And I see, I thought when I came to AA that alcohol was the problem. Alcohol was the solution to the problem, because alcohol does not do that to everybody. It only did that to me. I've got sisters and brothers, too, that'll have a couple of drinks and go, "I'm starting to feel it." And I'm thinking, that's the idea, isn't it? Come on now. But they don't start drinking and have one, and then you got to have another one or another. They don't have an obsession of the mind that'll cause them to just drink, drink, and drink. They don't have that. They don't have an allergy of the body. One's too many in 1,000. They don't have any of that. One's too many in 1,000 is not enough. And so that goes, that my life was when I started drinking. Now, I'm still fooling with the moonshine whiskey still. And that was kind of a joke. One night we went to town, down to this little town, and one of the guys says he knows where a bootlegger lives. We're in the city. So we go up to this bootlegger's house. And as soon as the guy opens the door, I said, "I know this guy. He buys my liquor." So I'm up in there buying shots of whiskey from this guy. I'm thinking, but I can't tell him, no, this guy buys it from me. But that's just what happened. And I'll tell you what, I could go on and on and on. In the very beginning, it was just, I was always a weekend drunk, as it turns out, simply because I couldn't afford to be anything else. I never drank through the week. Friday night, Saturday night, go out and get drunk. The rest of the time, you go back and do whatever you do. I just don't drink. Never had a problem with it. When I got up, my mom said, go to college, stay here and pick cotton. So I went off to college, and I got to college and did the same thing. I just barely got in. Brothers that went through constantly on the dean's list. I think I was on the dean's list one time. But that's just the way I was. But every weekend I got drunk, and I never got a DUI. I got DUIs later on. Okay. And I was thinking about just this today. And one guy said he got drunk and wrecked a car. And you know the sad thing about this? I wrecked 3 or 4 cars, but never wrecked a car drunk. Never wrecked one. Well, like they did wreck. I hit a guardrail one time, so I guess that counts as a wreck. But anyway, most of the damage I did on cars, I did stone cold sober. So I couldn't be an alcoholic. And that was one of the denial contributions. Those were the things that caused me to think. I knew some town drunk kind of people. They were drunk all the time. They couldn't hold a decent job. And I managed to get through college. I had to go to college back then. I had to go to some extra summer schools to make up for screw ups that I had. But I went to 2 summer schools, 4 years, 2 summer schools. But by today's standards, that would be breezing through college. These kids now, I've had a nephew that stayed in college for like 7 years. And he's just constantly going to college. I said, a 4-year program. What are you doing? But anyway, I was just a weekend drunk. I got out of college. I should have known I was an alcoholic because I had made a list of things I don't do. You know, if you got to make a list of don't do's, something is wrong. Don't ever drink on a day when you've got to go to work the next day. Well, most people, if you want to have a drink, you just have a drink. No big deal. But if I had a drink, it made me less than. It disturbed me. I couldn't perform as well, so I needed not to drink whiskey. But I had a list of things that I don't do. And everything it says don't do over the first few years out of college, I started doing. And I was living 2 lives as much as anybody can live 2 lives. I got out of high school. I got involved with a lady in college, and she got pregnant. And you know what? Back in those days, that was like 1960, 66, 65, 66. She got pregnant in 69. And back in those days, if a woman got pregnant, you just married her. And she would not have been my first choice to marry. She was a good choice for what we were doing. But that was, anyway, that's what happened. So I ended up married. She got pregnant. She had 2 kids. And the 2 lives I'm living is I became my son was an athlete. So I decided I wanted to be a football coach, a basketball coach, a little league. I was all of that little league stuff. I was doing all of that. And I lived the 2 lives and did it quite well until one summer we won the championship in the little league team on the little league program. And the next summer they kicked me out of the league for drinking around those children. And that's the 2 lives. Okay. And my life just, I heard a guy say it this way at one time. In the very beginning, if you were to measure the pleasure that alcohol did for me, it would be off the chart. The pleasure was off the chart to the high part, and the pain was minimal. It wasn't that bad, okay? But the problem is, over a period of time, I don't know how many years, how many months, but the pleasure came down just a little bit at a time, so gradual. I didn't notice how bad it was getting. But the pleasure was coming down, and the pain and suffering was going up. And no need to spend a whole lot of time talking about the drinking and what I did. I got a couple of 3 DUIs over the next few years. I hit the guardrail at one time, I thought. But that was just who I was. But at one time, I was out in a hotel. I had a job as a traveling salesman or a sales rep for this company. And I woke up in the middle of the floor, and I didn't know what had happened to me. What had happened is I had started to try to quit drinking because it was starting to adversely affect me in every way, shape, form, and fashion. I couldn't take the pain and suffering anymore, so I'm going to quit drinking. And I quit drinking like on months. Drank on Saturday night, not going to drink months Sunday. And Monday, I'm in a hotel in Hopkinsville, Kentucky, and I go into convulsions, and I wake up on the floor, and I've had an alcoholic seizure. Over the next year or 2, I don't know exactly, I ended up in the hospital 7 different times where the EMS people came, picked me up, and off to the hospital I would go. And 6 of those 7 times, I spent a week in the hospital. And that last time is when my doctor says, we're going to put you in the hospital. I mean, in rehab. My doctor told me that I shouldn't drink so much. Okay. I didn't know I don't have a drink less than switch. I got a switch that goes off and on. All or nothing. That's all I've got. The doctor told me, I've got other ailments. I went to the doctor. I've got something called, lactose intolerant. I can't have a glass of milk. It does something in my body. I get all sick on the stomach. Doctor told me, don't drink milk. Okay. Milk's out. Hadn't had a glass of milk. That doctor told me that like in 1971 or 72. Hadn't had a glass of milk since. The same doctor told me that you shouldn't eat fried foods. Your blood pressure's high. And he put me on a strict diet. Don't eat red meat. If I ate a steak since then, somebody else bought it. And don't eat fried food. I did all of that. Same doctor. That same doctor told me, don't drink so much. You know what I did? I went out and got a second opinion. I listened to him about the milk. I listened to him about the fried food. I listened to him about the red meat. But I didn't listen to him about booze. I went to a second opinion. And that next guy said what I wanted to hear. He said, just don't drink so much. You can have a couple. Well, I didn't know I couldn't have a couple. I don't work that way. But anyway, that's when it got so bad that I ended up having seizures in the hospital multiple times. And I got to a point in my life that I couldn't take it anymore. I was done. I waved the white flag. Dear God, please help me. Don't let me drink anymore. And that guy says we're going to put you in the rehab. And I thought he was an answered prayer, what I thought there. And that's what I did. They put me in that rehab center, and they started going on and on and on. And I said, I'm done. The guy asked me, he said, why do you drink so much? And they went around the room asking all of these people, and some guys drink to celebrate, and some guys drink because they were angry, and some guys drink just because they're in a bad mood, and some guys drink because they're at a party. And they finally got to me, and he says, why do you drink so much? And I said, I don't really know. I guess I'm just a garden variety alcoholic. I don't know. I drink everything they said, I agree with. I drink to celebrate. I drink. But the fact of the matter is, as one guy said in the meetings, he said, I drink and any day that ends in Y. That's just what I did. I had accepted 100% of who I was and what I was. I couldn't drink whiskey like normal people because I got all these examples all right around me. I got brothers and sisters, people that I dearly love. They're not trying to scam me. So I get in that treatment center, and the counselor comes in one day. He says, and he's talking all about the first step and the disease and the allergy and all like that. And he says, and he looked around the room. He said, now listen, one of you guys, somebody in this room, there was about 20 of us, it was a 28-day program. He said, somebody in this class is going to get in a car, finish this program, and go straight to a liquor store. He said, somebody else will do it later on. He said, one of you will be dead in a year or so. Two out of three of you will die as a direct result of this program. And I said, no, you don't understand. I'm done. It's like that poker game says on TV, that Texas Hold'em thing. I'm all in, man. I'm done. I waved the white flag. I am done. Tell me what I have to do not to drink so much or never get started again, because I found out that drinking has nothing to do with it. One drink's too many, and like some people say, 1,000's not enough. And that's just what I asked. What do I have to do so I don't have to get caught up in this thing again? First thing the guy says, well, you got to get a sponsor. You go get a daily routine, and do 90 meetings in 90 days. 90 meetings in 90 days? And then what? And he said, well, then just go to one a day. I said, oh, God, man, come on now. I'm a reasonably intelligent guy. 90 meetings in 90 days, one a day, that's the same thing. He said, man, are you going to argue with everything I say? And you know what? The way he put that was just, I was the one that was having the alcoholic seizures. I've been in the hospital 7 times. I was the one, not him. So I said, okay, I'm going to do it. And when I came in, they turned me loose from that treatment center, I said I was all in. I went and got a sponsor, just like they told me to. When I got one, because the treatment center took us to meetings, and they pointed out one guy, and he was kind of the head muckety-muck at this one little group. So I went over and asked him to be my sponsor. And he came up with the same thing, do the 90 meetings in 90 days, and I started doing it. And he said, you got to have a daily routine. I started doing the daily routine from that very first day. He said, you got to pray every day. Back then, they didn't have all these meditation books that they got. They had the 24-hour-a-day book. I started reading it then, and I still read it now, okay? So I got these. Pray, read the 24-hour-a-day book, go to a meeting, talk to another alcoholic, and then he got all of that done. Then he said, and don't tell any lies. Good God, that was that same guy. I heard that one guy say years later, don't drink, go to meeting book. Go to meeting, read the big book, and don't tell lies. And if you can't quit telling lies, at least quit telling unnecessary lies. And I'm thinking, these guys must be following me around, because that's exactly, those were problems that I had. But, you know, I didn't agree with any of that, okay? But agreeing with it or approval does not enter into it in this process, is what the guy asked. But he said, what you think, feel, and believe has nothing to do with this. This is a program of action. If you take the action on a daily basis, you will get better. He said, every time you hear of somebody at a meeting that gets drunk, don't listen to them. If they got drunk, don't listen to them when they tell you what they did. Listen to it when they tell you what they stopped doing, because they'll always tell you, oh, by the way, I quit going to the meetings. So I had to go to the 90 meetings in 90 days, then one a day after that, and I started doing it. But he told me I didn't have to approve of it, so I used to get on my knees every single day. And I told God, dear God, I don't believe this is going to work. I told the sponsor I didn't like it. I told the group I didn't like it. And I even told God I didn't like it. But I did it every single day. And he emphasized that willingness was the key. And I did it. And I woke up every day after all those trips to the hospital, 7 trips to the hospital. Twice I woke up in hotel rooms and laying in the middle of the floor and didn't know what had happened. That's when I didn't know what a seizure was. So but I started praying every single day. I still had the obsession. I wanted to drink every day, but I did what the guy told me to do. And I remember having 60 days, 70 days, but I don't ever remember having 85 days. So one day I'm down there on my knees, and I started to pray, and then I thought, now did I tell God I didn't like it? Couldn't remember. When was the last time I told him I didn't like it? I could not remember that. And then all of a sudden, I realized that something had happened in me, a transformation, a psychic change, something had happened in me, a spiritual awakening, I don't know what you would call it, but all of a sudden, for the first time since way back in college days, I did not have a desire to drink whiskey. Something had happened. A sense of well-being came over to me, and I went and talked to my sponsor about it. He says, your biggest challenge is just like the people you were telling me about in that treatment center, is do it and do it and do it. There's no ending point. You know, it's like progress in the big book. This is a program about spiritual progress. Well, you would think now if I do it every day, I get to a point. No, it says progress. There's no ending. There's no you're there. And, you know, every once in a while you hear somebody in an AA meeting say, I've got this. I've almost through the program, but I hear somebody say, I got this. I step aside. Let him have his way. Because that everyone I've ever heard say that paid the ultimate price for it. I've even had people in my life die from this program. And so I just got started, and I do it. And I started doing it. I went to that treatment center. Then I got out and started going to 90 meetings in 90 days. Then I do the one a day after that. This Zoom thing has opened up a new gate for me, because these people I see on this thing that I've done made at my sponsor's house are only there because of this. I've been going to Don's house for 10 or 12 years. But now that the Zoom thing is open, he's opened up the door like, you know, it's almost an international meeting. Now, it's certainly a national meeting because there's people from states all over the place. And Don has met so many people, and I can understand that. So, but I started doing it, and I tell you what, I didn't like it in the very beginning, but when that transformation happened, a psychic change happened, something happened, and all of a sudden, God touched my life. I heard a lady speaking a couple of days ago, and she was talking about what had happened to her and how she liked it. And this woman started to quote an old spiritual hymn that they used to sing in the Baptist church. And she started, and this lady could sing, and I can't. So I'm not going to try to. She said, "Amazing grace, how sweet the sound. It saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. Was blind, but now I see." It saved, when she said that, saved a wretch like me. Now, the problem, I had heard that song 10,000 times back in that Baptist church. But I never had to say, "I'm a wretch." When they just said, I said, yeah, whatever, go on. But all of a sudden, when this woman said that, and she was saved it, when I thought about a wretch like me, the reason I've got a wife today is because, the reason I've got the wife I've got today is because the first one kicked me to the curb. She took offense to my having a girlfriend. I don't know why she's so narrow-minded about a thing like that. Everybody got one. Why shouldn't I have one? Well, you know, and I thought, it's so ridiculous, my thinking about stuff and what was good or bad or right or wrong. But, you know, I had to change. A lot of things had to be changed in me. And so that's where the program guided me down a path. And, you know, I had to change. I had to change the way I act. I had to change the way I talked. I was talking to one lady one day, and I was, you know, she was a sweetheart of a lady, and I was dropping the F-bomb, and she said, "You are vulgar." Vulgar? But you know what? God sent that woman to me as a messenger. Nobody has heard me drop the F-bomb in a meeting since that day. And then one guy came to me and says, "You mean you can't do that in AA? I don't care what other people do. I'm not here to evaluate and judge anybody. I don't stand in judgment of anybody. I'm not qualified for that. I'm just telling you, I'll share with you my experience, strength, and hope. This is where I am. And this, so I got, so the first wife kicked me to the curb. Tell you about prayer. I had to change a lot of things. Okay. Eventually we got to this prayer thing. So I got to pray every day. So I got this new wife, and she gets up and she goes to the bathroom in the morning and smoke and all, do whatever women do back there. But while she's there, because I haven't got the courage, now I've been sober 7 years by this time. I haven't got the courage to ask her to pray with me. So when she goes do her thing, I jump down on the floor. Most insincere prayer that has ever been uttered was said by me, because I got to get it done before she gets back. Remember, they said, "Okay, you can meditate." Okay, I got 2 minutes. Maybe I can get away with that. One day, she came back and caught me down there. She looked at it and she thought, "I'm so glad for that." Because now she got these Bible things that she read every day. But she got down there beside me, and we've been praying together every day since. Got married in 1993. Now, I knew about prayer. That's what's so weird about this AA thing. AA hadn't taught me not a single thing that my parents didn't try to teach me growing up. They taught me to pray every day. Now I pray every day. Took me from 30-some years, I was almost 40 years when I got to the program. And now all of a sudden, "Oh, this AA has taught me." And if my mother was sitting standing there, she'd say, "I tried to tell you that." But you know, I'll tell you this. I listened to a lot of AA tapes. And there's a guy from up in Indianapolis. He said, "They call me Hard Way." And he said, "Because everything I've learned, I learned the hard way." And that's the story of my life. It is embarrassing to have to tell you that my mother told me I had a filthy mouth. My mother tried to teach me not to drink so much whiskey. I used to go home from college. That woman would go out and get a 6-pack of beer and buy some little bottle of wine or something and say, "Now here is something for you to drink while you're here. please don't go out. She was thinking, she was trying to get me to take it easy. But you know, I just had to learn it the hard way. So so his wife gets down there and prays with me. And, you know, it's about change. And back in that step 6 and 7, I had to change. It's all about change. Some guy was in a meeting one day, and he did something called a Cherokee, Cherokee prayer, I think he called it. He said, two natures beat within my breast. One is evil, one is blessed. One I love, one I hate. The one I feed, he says, will dominate. It will get me to this day. I've got to have the thing. I've got to have almost a checklist. These are things I do every day. These are things I have to quit doing. I learned what I had to, you know, it's like I had to learn to stop stealing. Come on, who are you kidding? You knew it was wrong from the time. But you know, I'll never forget. I was sitting in college one day, sitting next to this poor girl. And she dropped a little purse little wallet on the desk in front of us, and I scooped it up. And so she came out. My brother was a prominent figure on college on that campus. She came out and reported me to my own. That boy over there stole my wallet. So my brother gave her some money because he knew me. He said, "Yeah, he probably got it. I'll take care of it." And that's just. I had to learn the hard way, that lying and cheating and stealing. And it's like that one guy says, if you can't quit lying, at least don't tell unnecessary lies, because I play golf a lot. I go out and I shoot 92. I don't like to shoot in the 90s. So you'll say, how much did you shoot? I'll go 88. This guy says, why'd you tell that lie? That person doesn't even play golf. He doesn't even care. Why did you do it? And so I had to start. All of those things that I was doing, all of that, I had to change the way I talk, change the way of things I did. And all of a sudden, the rewards for doing the basic, fundamental, simple things are just unbelievable. One day at a time, when I was sober for a little while, a guy walks up to me and hands me what he called, it's called a camel coin. That's what it is. Some of you guys might have seen a camel coin, and the camel coin has a little saying on it. It says, good morning. No, the camel coin says, the camel each day goes twice to his knees, picks up his load with the greatest of ease. He walks through the day with his head held high and stays for that day completely dry. Now, when that guy gave me that camel coin, I thought he was something special to me. He realized that I was a special guy, so he's going to give me this camel coin. So he did. To this very day, even right now, I've got a camel coin in my pocket. I used to, at one point, I had a white coin that I carried around just one day at a time. And now I got the proverbial camel coin. So I usually carry both of those with me at all times. But that's just what I need to do, because I need something in my pocket that reminds me that I'm a garden variety alcoholic. If I don't do these things every single day. Somewhere I do realize that way back there, when I was going through this thing with every day, dear God, I don't want to do this. I don't believe it's going to work. I'm only doing it. And something happened to me. That was before I even went through the steps. God touched my life. Okay. I became aware of the presence of God, and it has never left me. I keep doing it day after day after day. I have been through step study groups. We've been at Don's house. It's like right now, we're going through the big book, but we've been through all kinds of different books at that Don's house. We went through the drop the rock thing for the 6 and 7 step, and all of those things that I have to change. And I would like to, sometimes I want to get upset. I said, there's nothing new here. This is the same stuff that my mother tried to teach me as a child. Don't lie. Don't cheat. Don't steal. But she says, or somehow I got the feeling, well, I've got a natural thing with this alcoholism. It's not something I caught. You can't catch it like a virus. Nobody can give it to you. Either you got it or you don't, because I got brothers. I went to college with some guys that drank a whole lot worse than me, used pills and drugs and smoked and all that, a whole lot worse than me. And when they got out and went to work, they quit. Well, when I got out and went to work, I could buy more and I get better stuff. I stopped. I hadn't drank Thunderbird wine in quite a while. I moved on up to drinking Canadian Club and all kinds of stuff. Now at the very end, but you know what? That too had a pinnacle to it, because I would go way, way, way up in price, but toward the end, it was down to pop-off vodka. There's no point in spending big money on stuff. Just give me the vodka. And I got to a point in my life, I'd get up in the morning at 5:30. The reason I got to get up at 5:30 is because the bait shop down the street, who got a liquor cage in the back, opens at 6 o'clock. And many days, I was waiting on those people to unlock that liquor cage. But God touched my life, and my life is better today than it has ever, ever been. All of those reasons I drank whiskey for are now gone. And now I know when that lady sang that amazing grace thing, amazing grace, how sweet the sound to save the wretch. I'm the wretch. I used to get upset when people called me things like that. Save the wretch like me. I once was lost, now I'm found. Was blind, but now I see me as I really am. Armed with the facts about myself, my life has changed. And that is so good. And I love this program. I still go to a lot of meetings. I go to meetings. People say, well, I go to at least one a day. Well, I did more than one a day when I was going to in-person meetings. I went to 10 or 12 a week. And sometimes my wife would look at me and say, now, you know you went to more than that. But now I'm up in early at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. I'll be on listening to a meeting in Normandy, France. Over in Paris, I'll be in a meeting that's Ireland tomorrow morning. I was at Normandy, France today at 12 noon, and I'll go to one in South Africa. They got a speaker meeting over there, and if any of you guys want to go down there, some of you might have been to that South Africa meeting. It was at 2 o'clock every day, but the time changes now. I've got it at 1 o'clock. But I do 3 or 4 meetings every day, and I host a newcomers meeting. A newcomers meeting is the best one for me, because I'm constantly being made aware of just how bad I was and where I can be. And I get total gratitude out of hosting that meeting. Now, that's where I was tonight when I couldn't be here right at time, because I had to give the host authority. I had to switch to the host, open it up, switch the host to the other guy. And when I leave here at 7 o'clock, I'll go back and check into that meeting. That's just because that's just who I am. My life is better today than it's ever been. And, you know, I managed to come here. I was a failure at everything. I've been so-so at everything I've been done in my life. But this is the only thing I've ever completely given myself to. It's like they said in that book, 50% of us came to AA and really tried. I never saw that really tried stuff. I used to argue with that. 50% don't stay sober. Well, the fact of the matter is, if you say 50%, how many of you came and really tried and continue to do it? That's the big difference. And I said I had to do that because I don't want to die drunk. And after a while, I was doing it just for self-preservation, but as soon as something touched me, and now I did it because I had to, and now I do it because I want to, and I like doing it. So that's enough. I get tired of listening. I wish I could come up with a new story, but to get a new story, you got to go out and drink some more, but it's the same stuff I got. So I like seeing some of you. I'll probably see more of you, but I recognize a couple of faces that come to Don's house. Good seeing you guys again, and thank you for all you guys do. Thanks, guys.